Hello and welcome to a Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is the free agency edition. A little bit different locations for both of us. We are actually in the same spot, but to minimize echo, I am outside and Nate is inside. Special thanks to the Indianapolis weather for being very nice today.
I know. I think you might actually have the better setup than me today, but okay. We'll finish and I'll go enjoy the outside.
It has been a week where we have not really spent much time outside. Neither of us have, because it is free agency. The Colts are in the middle of free agency. They have mostly re-signed their own guys so far. I was thinking about trying to do this almost as a first impressions podcast. I don't know if like all the categories work, just quite yet. So. What do you think? You want to try the categories or not?
Yeah, let's try them.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just running down a list of guys. So why not? We'll make it work.
Okay. So we'll do our best here. We're going to try to do a first impressions edition of the podcast. This is the first time we've done this with not a game, so that's going to be a little bit different. So far the Colts have essentially spent most of their time retaining their own players, which is a Chris Ballard staple. Almost all of their signings so far have been to retain their own players. They have made one outside signing as of Wednesday night. This is when we're taping this. The reason we're at the Colts facility is that we just talked to a bunch of those players, the guys that re-signed. And so we were over here today. But that's mostly what they've done so far is re-sign their own players. Chris Ballard has always said that this is a priority, is to bring his own guys back. He's done it so far in this. But I think most people are kind of wondering, you know, when the outside stuff is going to happen. What's your idea or look at the first 2 days? How do you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, we know Chris Ballard loves to sign his own guys back. I think when he said kind of after the season that having the quarterback on a rookie deal would open up flexibility, people got excited about the idea of that, meaning free agency would be different. To me, the way I kind of was feeling at the time was just that meant more flexibility to bring even more of their own guys back, maybe even more aggressive, pay certain market rates for guys who had big years. And they had a few of those guys out there. So they were really aggressive. Like some of the deals I think they made were, you know, I think they got good deals on, as we'll get into the categories. There are a few there that I was a little, the players got good deals out of them too. I thought some of them got a little bit more than I thought they would have, which is great for the players. But at the end of the day, the Colts have, you know, they came into this with $70 million to work with. And, you know, it's just an interesting time where, like, people like to judge this on, like, kind of what you get on the outside. What are you adding your team that you didn't have before? I think that's part of the conversation that we're going to have to get into, is how do they take that next step? How do they actually improve the roster? But I do think it gets under the radar just how important it is to keep certain guys from holes from developing. Or, you know, I know you've brought this up, like if you could go out there and make a big signing in free agency after losing your own guy at that position, it's not necessarily, you know, a huge boost if you're losing something good too. So they just went with kind of what they know. And a lot of those elements did work last year. And I think so far the things that held them back last year are not the things that they're going after so far. So there's still one position out there, I think one or two positions that they need to really do something with. And that's what I'll be interested in once we get into outside guys. But I kind of think this was the order of operations that was always going to happen, is a long list of internal free agents, and they wanted most of them back, and most of them are back.
Okay. Well, let's get into the categories. Hero of free agency here. What do you got for hero of free agency from a Colts perspective? The other part about this is that we're doing this very early in the process. I know it feels like for most Colts fans who are paying a close attention that it's been going on forever, but there's a lot of time left in free agency, a lot of guys left in free agency. So this is kind of we're kind of doing this on the fly with the chance that what we think could change, but as it stands right now, just after the league year opened, who you got for hero of free agency?
I want to go kind of with the easy one. I'm going to go with Michael Pittman Jr. What's weird with this stuff is, like, you could was Chris Ballard as a hero or villain for all of these based on whether like you like what he did. So I'm going to go more for like the other side. Like these are always agreements. So to me, the other side of this was Michael Pittman Jr., who, you know, I've had chats with lots of people I've chats with about becoming a free agent. We know he wanted free agency. He said today we talked to him, they weren't going to let him get there, but you know, you just weren't quite sure how this was going to play out once he was on the tag, how long he would be on it. If it went long enough, would that mean, you know, he's maybe not going to voluntary stuff? We don't know how that was all going to play out. From a Colts perspective, it played out as well as it probably could have in that they tagged him. They got a deal done shortly after, early clarity in free agency, early way to set the table for other guys they want to sign and how much money they're going to have. They got him for 3 years, $70 million, something around there.
Pittman?
Yeah.
Yes, 3 years, $70 million.
Yeah.
We don't have the exact details, but I don't think his are going to change much.
Yeah. I mean, we knew he was going to get a lot of money. I think it is a deal that will work on both sides, but it wasn't like the Colts had to just grossly overpay for him either. It's nicely fitting in there with, you know, he's right between Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel. That's the exact kind of Terry McLaurin I always thought was a really good comp for him as far as a highly productive number one receiver on a team that had quarterback instability and not a lot of other receiving options. And you're still left wondering kind of what's the ultimate ceiling, but certainly is a guy that's worked through every situation. So I think they got the deal they needed to. It's short term. It'll give him a chance to, as he said today, kind of like re-up it in a couple of years as the market rises. But for the Colts, it's, you know, it's flexible. It's a nice balance between making sure you have your number one receiver for Anthony Richardson. For his first four seasons, he's going to have this guy here as his number one receiver. He can build that kind of connection. That's a fascinating thing for me to think about, is that Pittman's never had one quarterback to build with, and Anthony's never had a go-to receiver to build with. You know, so he didn't get a lot of time at Florida, and they didn't have that kind of guy either, and then he got hurt last year. So this was exactly what I think they needed to have happen. They were never going to let him go in free agency, but this could have gone a negative way where he's on the tag and they're nowhere close in conversation and they don't feel like they have control of the situation. They gained control of it. They got the number one priority out of the way and they didn't have to overpay to do it. So I'll put Michael Pittman Jr. down there for sort of finding the balance with the Colts to get them a number one receiver and let them, you know, build this thing out.
As it stands right now, I think my hero, and Pittman's kind of the obvious one, the hole that was left there, if you didn't have him, is pretty enormous. So obviously I think that he was the biggest one coming in. We kind of knew he wasn't going to go anywhere. Pitt kind of said that today too. He was like, Chris wasn't going to let me find out what was out there in a real way. But he knew that going in. I think from a standpoint of the rest of the team and what would be the biggest loss, Kenny Moore would have been a huge loss. They do not right now, as we're talking right now, they don't have a safety signing. Julian Blackman is the one player they haven't re-signed yet, so they don't have a veteran free safety. The issue of the secondary is going to be, you know, we're going to talk about that a lot here in this podcast. And if you lose Kenny, you really have to make a bunch of moves because you don't have any experience in the secondary at all. So getting Kenny Moore back, just for where they are, I mean, they have more work to do there. That's, like I said, that's going to keep coming up as we do this podcast, but they had to have him back. Just because of the secondary is a spot they need the most help in his experience level and kind of what he means to that room.
Yeah, no doubt. Kenny was a guy that, yeah, I was just curious if, like, he said today he felt at the end of the season it was 50-50 whether he'd be back. He wanted to. He made that clear. But as far as if this would end up being the place where he could get the kind of deal that made sense, that he would fit exactly where they were going to go, that it would all come together, felt 50-50. That's kind of how I was feeling with it. I mean, we know the Colts like to retain their guys, as we've said, so it's probably always a little bit more than 50-50. But still, you know, I could have seen other teams become a lot more aggressive for a nickel corner than what we've seen out of Gus Bradley's defense is not overly emphasized that they made good strides last year. What we learned in this process, I think, is that they realized how important Kenny can be and that there is a way to bring that out in this scheme to make him a big-time playmaker and run defense and, you know, making plays on the ball, but also as the leader, the communicator of that defense that's incredibly young. And if they're going to still, you know, build around some pieces in the secondary that are young, which they're not all going to be veterans, even if they start getting aggressive. Like that guy, he showed them a lot behind the scenes, I think, last year of what his value is. And I think he just, over the past, you know, he had a really rough 2022 where he, you know, he tried the little hold in that didn't work for a better deal, kind of got on the bad side of fans with that, and then didn't deliver on the field, and the season went poorly for the team. And it was like, I remember talking to him after that season, and he very much felt like, I think he honestly thought that it was possibly over here, or that it could be soon over when he had 1 year left on his deal. So to go from there to where he is now, I mean, he just had an incredible past calendar year. The conversations he had this time last year to get his place with the team and the scheme right, the way he played on the field, playing 16 games, and then handling this process to where he's again the highest paid slot corner. He got a really, really nice deal. I didn't know if they would pay that as much to him. I don't think it's an overpay. I just didn't know if they were the team that was going to invest that much in the slot corner. But, you know, he was able to show his value to them. And I do think it's all right. Like, it's all for the reasons you laid out. They need him so badly, or they were just going to be scrambling for any kind of veteran presence. And it's nice to have a veteran that's as established as he is, but he's still 28 years old. So it's like, you're getting him right in the prime of his career. So I think it's a great fit.
That moves us to the villain of free agency. This is kind of a tougher one. I think these first four categories work better for the game. I think later on, as we get in there, it'll work better, but villain of free agency so far.
Yeah. We're going to just have to sort of interpret this in our own unique ways. As far as like, I mean, as it stands right here, I'm going to have to go with Julian Blackman. And by villain, again, like, there's nothing that he's done like nefariously wrong or even the Colts. It's just like, he's currently the guy that, if we're talking about kind of who's won so far and who has not yet won, Julian Blackman's the one who's still out there. He's the one guy that they've not re-signed who I thought they'd have a lot of interest in. They may still, but he's kind of, it's bad luck. It's bad timing, really. He had a great year last year, like way, way surpassed a lot of expectations about what he would be in a new position. Stayed pretty healthy till late in the season, but then had another late injury, but really was exactly what you wanted. Communicator, guy made plays on the ball, led the Colts in interceptions, like led them in pass breakups. He was everything they wanted. It just turned out that it was 1 year at a new position. It didn't establish himself quite enough. And the real thing is that he's at the most bloated position in free agency. And right now the safety market is very frozen. There's been a couple of guys that have signed, but there's really players much more established than him out there, like Justin Simmons and Quandre Diggs, multi-time Pro Bowlers. They're still lingering out there. And so he's kind of caught in a weird space where, because of that, he's probably not getting the deals on the outside yet. His market hasn't moved yet with outside teams. And the Colts are probably rightly playing it very patiently, knowing that he's not commanding that kind of market. So just as of right now, he's just the kind of guy who's caught in the in-between until the Colts, you know, I don't know what you hope. I hope Julian gets a good deal. I like all these guys who sacrificed a lot to reap those rewards. I don't know how that's going to play out for him until those other deals go down. And then for the Colts, like, they've got to figure stuff out at safety. Like, that is the position right now that, like, they cannot go into the draft with the safety room looking like it is. So whether that's Julian, whether that's swing at another big time safety, they could maybe sign two safeties, but that's the spot that, as of right now, the one they didn't address among in-house free agents that I thought, you know, they really needed as far as starters going into free agency. And as of right now, it's the position that I think is most likely to hold them back until they fix it. So he kind of just feels like an easy fit for a weird titled category for this type of thing.
I'm gonna, this is not normal for me, but I think just in terms of the way we look at it, the Houston Texans are a good villain. The Texans signed Danielle Hunter. They signed Danico Autry. They signed – is there another big name that I'm missing for the Texans? Oh, they signed a linebacker. They signed a linebacker from the Titans. And then there's got a string of lower-level signings. They traded for Joe Mixon. I'm not super high on a lot of their signings so far in terms of, like, the players. Autry and Hunter are the guys. I think the fact that the Texans are signing people, though, is it changes the way people look at, you know, it feels like there's pressure on the Colts. And there is. I think that you and I both think – I want to say this right off the top. I said last week, we've been on record, but I wrote last week that the Colts have to get better in free agency. And I didn't mean get better at, like, the process of free agency. I meant they have to come out of this process better than they were before. They have to upgrade this team in some meaningful way. I don't think that they've necessarily done that yet. They've just plugged holes mostly. But because the Texans have signed big-name players, sort of heightens everything on the first couple of days. And there's, like, an element of, hey, we're not done yet to this. You know, like, the other people have made this comparison, but a couple of years ago, the Colts didn't sign Stephon Gilmore or Rodney McLeod until the middle of the summer. Or not the middle of the summer, middle of April. And both of those guys were very good. I mean, it was a terrible team, but very good signings. So, like, you can get, like, this free agency process, especially if you, like, look at corner and safety right now, there's still a lot of guys out there. And so that's kind of but I think when other teams are making moves, it puts pressure on it and kind of heightens everything, and it makes people a little less patient. It makes it feel like it's a little worse than it is right now, because that's the thing, is if this is all they're going to do is like, you know, fill holes and not try to improve anything, then yes, I won't like that at the end. But I don't know. We're still 2 or 3 days into this. It just feels that way because other teams are making big moves.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's like the Texans are better than they were coming into it. Now, I don't know how much better they are because, you know, they lost Jonathan Greenard to get Danielle Hunter, but it's an upgrade, but, you know, it's one good player out for another. Same kind of thing, like Devin Singletary is a solid running back. Maybe Joe Mixon's can be an upgrade, I'm not sure. You know, they went out, but they got some other moves. They're smaller moves, but they're outside guys that they brought in, a lot of special teams type of players, which is an area they had to get better at. You know, they're taking swings on talented players that haven't worked elsewhere, like Jeff Okuda. Like, they're bringing in those outside guys. They're coming off as a team that's like, we've got the quarterback on a rookie deal. We feel like our moment is now, and we have to get better. We have to close the gap between us and, like, the Ravens that we saw in that playoff game. The Colts have yet to make that move. So that's got to be the next step here beyond, you know, all these guys they've brought back that, like you said, plug the holes. There's got to be some type of effort to look at, like, what do we need more of that we didn't have last year, and how do we find those solutions with where we need to have veterans? And that's the thing I'm waiting on the Colts to do. So they cannot certainly make up ground. Secondary is that area to do it. But until they do, as it stands right now, like Zaire Franklin was talking today about how it's time to go get banners. It's time to go get actual accomplishments and not just, you know, we're running it back, but we need to, like, elevate. And that's the thing that as it stands today, if you were to put odds on the division, I think you'd have to make the Texans the favorites because they just won it. And they're the team that's adding some stuff. Whereas you have, like, the Jaguars just lost Calvin Ridley. The Titans have made moves, but they're so far behind, I don't think they're really in this race. The Colts are kind of just status quo so far. So they've avoided holes from forming. But as far as chasing down the Texans, they've got some work to do.
Unsung here, I'll lead this one off. I think that Tyquan Lewis has not gotten enough credit for his season that he had last year. And, you know, I know there's still some people who are like, well, he hasn't done enough. Like, he's not a starting defensive end. He didn't get a starting defensive end deal. It's 2 years, $12 million, $7 million guaranteed, like $7.7 million guaranteed. That's not a starting defensive end deal. He's a last year he played all the games. He was a very good rotational player. He finished third on the team in quarterback pressures. Now his sack numbers ended up being four, which is not didn't put him third, but like all those pressures, all that stuff played a role. And I know for a fact from reporting I've done behind the scenes whenever he was trying to sign that one of the reasons his deal was much higher this year is that other teams noticed that and were trying to sign him too. That's why it's a 2 year deal instead of a 1 year deal like it's been the last couple of years. I also think that if they lose him, we were probably underplaying the significance of that because that's 450 snaps, a lot of them pass rushing snaps that you have to replace. So in terms of unsung, like I think that, you know, getting him back, if he's that same player again, it's big. And also you would have had to replace him with somebody else. Just would have.
Yeah, I think that's all well said. He had his best year last year because he also kind of found the right mix. He played a lot fewer snaps, but it kind of sustained him longer. I mean, he played every game and he was better than he'd ever been in those previous seasons, even before those injuries. And, you know, I asked him about that today because he could have, because he had that interest from other teams, he could have gone and found somewhere else that had more of a, you know, he could be more of a, the dude, more of the impact guy playing more snaps. Obviously the money usually drives these decisions, but Taekwon has always loved being here. He's just always loved the people in the building, the way that they bet on him and re-bet on him when he was injured and brought him back. And, but also he's found a nice fit with, you know, playing next to DeForest Buckner and both as a defensive end and as a defensive tackle, and the room that he's got with Kwity Paye and Dio Adangbo, and just, you know, playing in Gus Bradley's defense. Like he's kind of found this smart path here where it's kind of understanding his journey to this point and what his skill set is, where it's different than like other pass rushers who just go for biggest opportunity and biggest deal, and that's all that drives it. Like he's trying to sustain. He wants to be here for a long time. He wants to sign another couple deals, I imagine. And so this is a way that this role they found for him last year, I think, is going to sustain him to be a healthier, more impact player with limited snaps and a versatile, kind of unpredictable role. And that could end up being something that maybe he doesn't ever have one deal that, you know, is breaks the bank, but he sustains long enough to have a very productive and happy career. And he just seems very, very happy to be in the spot. And that's the good sign for the Colts. I think it's a good unsung hero because a year ago, probably a little over a year ago, when they were going through the mess of 2022, I wondered how many players would have that mindset anymore for this franchise. And there were guys at this time last year that were free agents that I can tell you were like, they were looking for the first ride out of town because it was so messy. And so it says a lot about how they've corrected that with Shane Steichen and moving away from some of that craziness, Chris Ballard kind of taking more control and just getting the stability and the professionalism back in the building. And those are all the kind of elements that made Taekwon really want to be here. So it's a good win for them.
And ultimately the Colts did end up giving him the best deal too. So that helped.
That always helps. Yeah. I guess what I'm getting at with him is like, he could go somewhere else, potentially produce more and then sign an even bigger deal. Right.
More of a bigger role. Yeah.
But he likes this place. Unsung hero for me, I'm going to go with, just as, you know, for the signings they've made so far, I'm going to go with the one outside guy, Raekwon Davis, just because, you know, that's one that I don't, you know, I've seen people go, you know, it's easy for fans to get cynical. They make one outside signing and it's like a backup nose tackle from a run defense that wasn't highly rated last year. So it's not flashy. It's very Chris Ballard, not flashy, but it has a chance to be a very important signing, I think, because they paid up to get Grover Stewart here. I think his deal signifies just how much they realize that they do not have anything beyond him at all. And we saw that in the games he was suspended for. They couldn't stop anything on the ground. 150 plus yards a game, almost 5 yards a carry. And they need to prevent that from happening. And they've got, now that they've signed Grover Stewart, they've got two interior defensive tackles who are awesome players, but they're both getting into their either late 20s, early 30s, and like that kind of lifestyle, getting double teamed, and if you're going to get run at a lot, where the offensive linemen are moving downhill at you, like that, that can take years off players' careers. And so to sustain those guys, they had to find somebody who could play inside on rundowns. They've got Taekwon and they've got Dio Dangbo who can rush inside on passing downs, and that's nice, but those aren't the plays that are wearing guys down with double teams in the run game. And Raekwon Davis is going to fill that kind of role. So we'll see quite how effective he is at it, if he's a, you know, a huge difference maker, but like he's going to be a guy who can spell Grover a little bit, can back him up if he were to miss any time. But also there's moments against certain run-heavy teams where he can play next to him in DeForest Buckner's spot or in short yardage type situations. And if you can limit DeForest Buckner's snaps by, I don't know, 10 a game even, you know, over the course of 17 games, that, that stuff really adds up for a guy that all the time he plays every game, but he always seems to be kind of playing through stuff, and he'll miss practice and he'll sort of gut it out, and he gets double-teamed so much. So as far as kind of making these things last, these contracts, making sure they don't kind of fall apart as players age, like that's one of those glue signings that's very easy to just kind of gloss over and not be excited for, but it has a chance to be a very sneaky and important move.
Yeah, they've been trying to take snaps off of Buckner for a while because he's played roughly 75% of the snaps his whole career. That's a ton for a defensive tackle. They've been trying to find ways to get them off of him. I like it better if you're doing that on running downs than I do on passing downs. Unsung villain. I'm going to twist unsung villain. Like villain, like you said, it doesn't work as well here. I'm going to twist unsung villain a little bit and just go with the unsung hole on the team right now that could be filled in free agency. It's probably not unsung. I don't know. People are talking a lot about lots of stuff. It's hard to keep track. People are very upset about lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Backup quarterback is a place that there's a lot of guys gone right now. There's some guys who are still there. I think I'm pretty much totally fine with Ryan Tannehill or Tyler Huntley. I think Joe Flacco is a possibility because he has history with Steichen. But like, there's a lot of guys who've come off the board already, and that's the part I think that makes it an unsung, you know, quote unquote villain or a bad thing is you're wondering, okay, what's the competition like for these guys? They did very well with Gardner Minshew last year. He's played better football. Well, they got better production out of him and a better team out of him than anybody's ever gotten before. You just saw him get the big deal, but it's a spot where, you know, you kind of see the names kind of dwindling down. There's still guys to sign, but it just feels like it's getting thinner than you'd like.
Yeah, I'm just going to double up on that one because I just hope that's not the position that the Colts are underrating the need for this year. It's weird to think about. So, like, each year, like, one of the criticisms of Chris Ballard is he leaves a position open, just kind of patches it together or banks on guys coming back. And then at the end of the year, we're talking about how they fell short because of that position. Think about pass rush 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, I guess it would be. 2 years ago was offensive line, and last year was secondary. And so you wouldn't think of backup quarterback being important like those are, but I think it has a chance to be because you've got a quarterback coming off of shoulder surgery who – as I've talked about on this podcast a lot, like I think it gets unfairly spun as if like we can predict how his career is going to go, that I don't like anybody assuming that Anthony can't stay healthy when he's had one major injury above high school, but he does have to prove that he can do that. And he's not played enough, played one real full season since high school. We have to see it play out. They want to use that rushing upside out of him, and they should, even if he has a very durable and productive career. I mean, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, those guys who run at that level outside of Josh Allen's kind of the one exception, but all these high volume rushing quarterbacks do miss a game or two here or there. Justin Fields did. That's part of the
even makeup. Some of the pocket guys. You and I were just talking earlier about, you know, Joe Burrow has now gotten season ending injuries in two of his seasons so far.
Yeah, for sure. And so it's like, I understand. Like when the Colts had Peyton Manning, you know, there was the idea that like well, he is so much the system that there is no backup to replace that. I understand we may eventually get to that level with Anthony, but right now he's a developing quarterback. I'm looking at him as like a rookie quarterback still. And so I think whenever you have a rookie quarterback, the backup position is very important, both for injury replacement, for just for veteran leadership. I still think he could use that in the room. And so there got a lot of guys that got signed that I thought would have been great fits here. Marcus Mariota, Tyrod Taylor, as I've talked about, Drew Locke. So we'll see. There's still options out there. Some of the guys you mentioned would, you know, if they end up signing them, would be fine. I hope it's not the position that they're going to say, like, well, you know, it's Anthony's team. We don't need to think about the backup very much. Let's go cheap here, because I think it, like, just if things don't go perfectly right with Anthony, and anytime you have a guy that's essentially a rookie, you should assume that they're not going to go perfectly right. I just would hate for that to be the position that undoes some things if they have to play a few games with someone in a backup role and they don't have confidence there. So I just hope they're not underrating it too much.
Number of the day, I'm going to go first here because I'm sure you probably haven't thought about this one. 3 years, $30 million, and 3 years, $39 million are my numbers. And it's because of my suspicion when Kenny Moore and Grover Stewart's deals came out. Grover's, the guarantees on this all always matter, and I don't have the full details on I don't have full details on Kenny's yet. Grover's, depending on if you want an out, it's 2 years, 20, 25 or 26. Here's the thing. The Colts don't usually take the out very often. Beck Ballard doesn't like to do that. If you go back and look, they just don't cut very many people before the end of their deal. It's like Shaquille Leonard, Pierre Desir, Matt Ryan. Probably missing somebody, but it's not very many people. But the thing that's interesting to me about those deals is essentially when you adjust for the inflation of the cap, those are basically the same deals that they signed on their last deals with the Colts. Grover's was $330 and Kenny's was like $8.3 million per year. It's basically the same level of investment from a cap perspective in the same player. And obviously both guys are a little bit older. It's hard to tell like what kind of competition and stuff they were going to get. But like, it's just interesting to me that those deals ended up being basically the exact same deal, just once you adjust it for inflation. And inflation of the cap too. Like, throw out all the I know inflation can be talked about in like a CNN way. We're not doing that. This is a football podcast. The cap has gone up significantly since 2020. That's all I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the gas prices are higher, but these guys, I think, can afford them with the deals they got this week. It is interesting because it kind of underscores that, like, they just looked at both players and they're like, we think you're the same thing that you were when we signed you. We want you here. And they were like, okay, let's just kind of do the same deal and let's just adjust it to the times. And both players are coming off really nice years, so makes sense in that way. I'm going to tie my number into that a little bit, which is 32, which is the age that Grover Stewart's going to be in the second year of this deal. I'm not calling him old because I'm also 32. So, but it's the thing that's interesting about it.
This is the part of the podcast where Nate comes to grips with his mortality.
I know. It's about to have a dark turn here. Get very existential. But the reason I bring that up is that's the only reason I thought that maybe Grover wouldn't get a cap inflation adjusted deal. Is usually when players get into their 30s, they sign for less than they did before. I'm not saying it's great for Grover. I love that he got that deal. That's why I thought it would maybe come in a little less. It does show that they didn't have very much behind him. It's a very hard, like, it's not a position you can just go replace in the draft, because rookies are not, like, you need that veteran strength there. But it ties into what I used for the unsung hero. This is kind of why Raekwon Davis, he's going to make this deal make sense if he delivers by taking a few snaps off of him as well as Forrest Buckner, so that you can kind of maintain that same play that you paid for, you know, with a inflation adjusted deal. You're going to get the same kind of level of play, maybe a little less volume, but if it's only, you know, a few snaps here and there, Grover is still a hugely, hugely impactful And what I love about him as a run defender is he's not just a space eater. Like, he throws guards down. He makes the plays. He makes tons of tackles and tackles for loss. And so he, like, they need to maintain that player. And that's why there's a little bit of risk just with him. He's going to turn 32 next year. And the third year of the deal, he's going to turn 33. They've got to find a way to sustain that play at a position that can wear down. That's where I think Raekwon Davis could really help that out. So the fact that they can combine those two moves kind of almost at the same day, I believe, it was both went down. That's where it made a little bit more sense to me. But I do think it's a great deal for Grover, and I'm happy for him because that's what I think all players should want people to be like, wow, that's a lot of money, because it's like, yeah, that means I won, and Grover won this deal.
I didn't have any issue with his deal or Kenny's deal. In terms of the money, I think it's especially like at corner. I think Kenny's being 10, as much as he plays 95% of the snaps. I think he's going to end up like 25th or 24th or something corner wise. That doesn't seem like too expensive for me. We're not going to do football things that gave me joy. I'm just going to be flat out honest with you. This week does not give me joy. this is a lot of trying to get information and not getting it. There's a lot of inside baseball reasons that this is not the most fun week for us. But we're going to skip that. There's no game day observation. I don't have any observations because mostly I've seen the inside I've seen a desk for most of the thing. We're going to skip right to the last ones. And we're going to start with too much credit. Too much credit on the first couple days of free agency. I'm going to start here. People focus so much on outside signings. And I get why they make the headlines. But to me, what you need to do is look at what's like, who are they replacing? How are they filling a hole? Like, does that player take them to a new level that they weren't before? We kind of hit on this earlier. The Texans signed Danielle Hunter, who's great. Danielle Hunter is great. I have zero issues with Danielle Hunter. But he's replacing Jonathan Greenard, who had 12 and a half sacks last year. Now, even if Hunter is a better player, and I think he is, like, he has to be a lot better player to dramatically change that defense. Same thing with, like, I saw somebody earlier today, the big surprise was that Calvin Ridley signed with Jacksonville, or signed with Tennessee instead of Jacksonville. And I saw somebody say they've already, you know, they were trying to look for playmakers. They've signed Tony Pollard and Calvin Ridley. They've addressed that. Well, Tony Pollard was signed because they're not re-signing Derrick Henry, who had 1,167 yards last year. He's not, like, Derrick Henry maybe isn't like 2020 Derrick Henry, but 1,167 yards is still nothing to sneeze at. They had a hole at running back without him. You got to start, like, I think when you start looking at teams, and this will end up tying into my later point, but I'll just start doing a little bit of the last categories now. Like, you have to start looking at, did they take their team to the next level, or are they just filling holes that they've already created? And that's where I think the biggest thing is with the Colts, is we haven't seen them make a signing yet that takes them to a new level. They've mostly just plugged holes with their own guys, which I think is generally better than going and getting outside free agents almost always. They haven't done like anything to do it. I just think that some of the signings that people are talking about as these big, huge signings, you have to look at who got left off. Like, you know, who did you lose in this deal that you're replacing? And I don't think that's the way it's talked about enough. Not on NFL Network or ESPN, but also like in the fan community. It's just like, oh, they signed that guy. Okay, well, they signed that guy. Who is he replacing?
Yeah, I think it goes back to like the mystery box idea that like fans get so excited just to have something new or different. And it's like, it can, you know, like if the Colts had let Michael Pittman walk and signed Calvin Ridley, would have gotten some people fired up because it's just different. Even though I think those are probably two pretty similar players. And it's like Calvin Ridley can be anything. He could even be Michael Pittman Jr. So that's like, that's just kind of how this goes a little bit. I guess for mine, since we're kind of expanding
this is the Family Guy thing where you could have a boat or you can have a box. And he's like, well, what's in the box? It could be anything. It could even be a boat.
Yeah. Yep. That's the mystery box. People love it. It's time of year. It's like, that's why there is reasonable criticism for the Colts not doing enough in free agency. But I think too much of it is rooted in like, you just want different players at the same positions. when some of them are just perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine to sign one of your nickel corners back who is one of the best in the league to a contract that pays him like one of the best in the league. Since we're kind of expanding this to more like the free agency around the NFL as a whole, I'm going to get for too much credit. I'm going to go to the players who are getting their deals restructured, and the way that that's being spun is like, you know, they're taking less money. They're like opening up the salary cap. Like most restructures do not change the money that the player is getting.
It changes the salary cap.
Yeah. It changes the salary cap. It helps teams just push money into different places. But like, you know, like Jalen Ramsey had a tweet about this. He didn't take a pay cut. They restructured his deal because it's a multi-year deal and they can, but it doesn't mean that like he lost something in this. I've seen this.
A lot of times it gets them their money faster because base salary gets converted into signing bonus and they have to get handed that as opposed to getting it as a check during the season.
Yeah. And so it gets in like the thing where it gets weird is that I think that creates this idea that like players should be obligated then to take less money when they do have opportunities to make those decisions. Like when they do go to sign is take less money. And this idea is out there that like, this is a thing players do out of like this noble care for their franchise. That just, it doesn't happen that way. Usually when players take a pay cut, it's because they know they're going to get cut. Like they have no choice. And when they take a true pay cut, players are not just giving money back out of like, oh, you know, I guess I had too much money. I'm going to give it back to the franchise that, by the way, is a $1 billion industry owned by a billionaire. That's just not the way it goes, nor should it. So it's just funny that the way that like that gets spun. I don't know why it's a lot of people in media who are covering it who are talking about it that way. It's like we need to adjust as an industry to understanding that these are just cap maneuvers teams make that they've been making for a long time. And I also think, yeah, you should not therefore expect anybody to ever actually do that thing, which is take less money. There's no reason why, you know, there's no reason why Kenny Moore should not become the highest paid slot corner if he can, because he earned it and he, the team has plenty of money. I promise you that's not the issue. So it's just kind of funny.
Yeah. Just to sort of expand on my part of my theory is like, I thought of something else while you were talking, so I'm just going to throw it in here real fast. Like, I think that's why a lot of times free agents, like, you know, you always say the team that wins free agency doesn't end up actually winning more games. I think a big part of the reason is what I said. Like, they're just filling holes that they've already created themselves rather than, like, doing something to take their team to the next level. I'm trying to figure out what to do with this next category because.
Well, that's a good point. I was just going to say that like a lot of the teams that are spending a lot of money right now, it's a sign of the holes on their team. Like you are signing this because you can't go to the draft. You can't trust a rookie because we got a major problem. We got to solve it now. And so a lot of the better teams, what you're seeing is they're making more like depth signings. They're signing their own players back. That's what ideally you would want to do because you don't have those holes because you've been drafting and developing well enough over the years. And so it's like a team like the Jaguars usually will go nuts in free agency and it gets them some hype that time of year, but it's usually a sign of like, or like the Patriots started doing this in recent years. They started to make a lot of signings, but they're signing to make up for bad draft picks. And so that's what you like. You want to be the opposite of that. You want to be the team without hype and free agency. Usually it can be a useful tool. Don't get me wrong. Like Eagles, who are a very smart franchise, went out and signed Saquon Barkley because that's sort of like that finishing touch move at a position where they want a needle mover. But you just have to take it all in context and not overrate it.
I was saying, I don't know what to do with this other category. Cause the way we do the too much credit, too little credit, or too much blame, too little blame is that it's dependent on wins and losses. Like too much credit if it's a win, it's too much blame if it's a loss. But I kind of have all three categories at my disposal. I think we're going to go with the most critical. Let's go with too little blame. We'll go with the most critical category and say like too little blame. What's too little blame for the first 3 days of free agency?
Too little blame.
The bird above me is getting, if you can hear it, is getting too little blame for trying to be on the podcast.
I can hear that. It's like we're trying to get a third host in this whole thing.
It's very loud. It's right above my head.
Going nuts. So maybe too little blame to the bird. I'm trying to think here. Like, I have a good one for too little credit. So I'm thinking here. Okay, on too little.
Well, how about that? We'll let you pick. You can pick. You can pick your category.
Okay, I'll do too little credit to start out. And for too little credit, I'm going to go with Shane Steichen. I think should get at least
I know where this is going.
Signing bonus for Gardner Minshew's new deal. First of all, congrats to Gardner Minshew. Big time winner in free agency. This time a year ago, he signed a deal for $3.5 million. He just got $15 million guaranteed and $25 million over 2 years. Incredible deal for him. Like, he is a winner. We talk about, like, you want people to say it's a bad deal because the player won. Gardner won on that. But I mean, his best game of the season came against the Raiders, who happened to be the team that just signed him. That was a shocking, shocking deal to me. Not that, I mean, we talked about, I thought Gardner would maybe be one of the higher paid backups who could maybe be a bridge quarterback. Some of these deals where they get like $8 to $10 million. But like, I don't know. I saw like Jameis Winston got a deal for like $8.5 million. I think he and Gardner are probably very similar players. Personally, I think I'd rather have Jameis Winston just because of, I think there's a little more upside and aggressiveness to go down the field. But hey, I mean, Gardner delivered on his opportunity last year, stepped in, helped this team get close to the playoffs. But if a team is buying into it at the level that the Raiders are, where they're, if they have him for 2 years, he's going to make $13 million a year, basically. Like, Shane deserves a ton of credit for what he was able to pull out of that. A lot of that production came in RPOs, easy design throws, trick plays. I just think Shane really got as much as he could possibly get out of a pretty limited skill set there. So congrats to Gardner for an amazing deal. But that was impressive. That was a big testament to what Shane did, that he got a quarterback that this time a year ago, not the league had moved on from, basically. And now all of a sudden the team's giving him $15 million guaranteed.
I don't know if I can recover from that. That was an incredible too little credit.
that was the one category I was most prepared for in this podcast.
That was an incredible too little credit. I'm glad you made that adjustment. I'm really struggling with it. I
go back to too little blame.
Too little blame. It's hard to know like what the blame level is. Actually, you know what? I'm going to switch mine at the very last second and go to too much blame. Too much blame for not doing deals like right away at the beginning of free agency. And I want to say this again. This is going to be this. I'm stepping on my last two categories here, but I'm going to keep saying it so that people don't think it's right. Like, if the Colts do not come out of the depth chart right now, if you look at the starting lineup of the Colts, like, it is screaming for help in the secondary, experienced help in the secondary, absolutely screaming for it. The fact that it hasn't come yet is not necessarily the end all be all. And that's why we kind of have to hedge our bets a little bit on this podcast, because we don't know exactly what it looks like. When we get to the draft and most of those moves have been made, and if there's still enormous holes that they have to fill through the draft, I think we can keep talking about it, you know? But like, Gotta pull back a little bit from the first couple days of free agency and see where it goes, because some of their best signings over the years have come weeks afterwards. Justin Houston was a good signing. That was like 10 days after the opening of the league year. Stephon Gilmore was super late. I think Xavier Rhodes was late. There have been a lot of these over the years that have come later on. And like, I know that those maybe aren't the like super top of the 101 NFL.com list, but those were good signings for the Colts and in some cases expensive signings. In the cases of Gilmore and Houston, those were like fairly big money signings that paid off for them. Like, we have to wait and let it play out a little bit. Like, that's the thing about this is we have to wait and see what they do. They have holes they have to fill. They have not gotten themselves, I don't think they've done anything to take themselves to the next level yet, but there's still time.
Yeah, that's pretty perfect. That's totally agree with that. It kind of ties in everything we talked about, how people, I think, view free agency through more of like a highlights and hype and headlines lens than what it ultimately is supposed to be used for, which is filling needs and answering for your desperation. There's a lot of time to go on. There's a lot of like what we think of the Colts aggressiveness level could flip on a dime if they go out and sign like two players.
They trade for LeJarius Sneed. We'll just throw something out. Like that, it changes it.
Yeah, totally changes. And like that happened a couple years ago where it felt, you know, their free agency felt kind of like this. And then they signed Stephon Gilmore. And all of a sudden, it had a different feel to it. So that one's really good. This one's kind of weird. For too much blame, I'm going to go to.
Oh, you don't have to pick one. We're letting you.
I am going to go with one for. Try to find a good way to put this. I'll say sort of like the Colts pass rush slash I'm going to throw Nate Oley into this since he's the defensive line coach they just moved on from. I feel like one of the issues that Chris Ballard talked about was how they couldn't beat max protection late in the year. The pass rush, you know, they finished top five in sacks, but it seemed like they wanted more out of that group late in the year. And there were moments where I guess it could have played a little bit better. But like when the team is going to max protect – like that says something about how much they respect your pass rush, but they don't respect your ability to cover. And they only send out a couple targets. And if they're consistently beating you, no matter what, that to me played into why we are here sitting here really concerned about the secondary. That's where like the Colts have got to make moves and we'll see how concerned they were about the secondary, but the way they've talked and acted so far makes me wonder how much they are. I mean, Chris Ballard has said to play the other side of this, he has said he didn't give Gus Bradley enough in the secondary. They were young. So there was some acknowledgement of that. But I do think that is one area where they have to do more than just bringing Kenny Moore back. So we'll see how it plays out. But they really need to, bolster that secondary with experienced players because if you cannot cover people, like against the Texans, they had like one working wide receiver and two other guys out on routes and max protection and just consistently torched that secondary like that. None of the blame in that moment should really go to the pass rush, I don't think, unless you just want to say that they don't have a game wrecker on the edge, which, again, is not the fault of like that's just not the fault of any one person except the fact that you didn't make that big swing to get the big pass rusher. So I don't know. I don't want there to be any blame in the pass rush, really, for what last season ended up being down the stretch. You've got to go find the solutions in the secondary to not put everything just on one unit.
Yeah, I think this is where we just skip right to one to go on with the because the one to throw away piece of it, we kind of already touched on that a little bit. These categories are a little bit hard. I still like that we did it. It still allows you to kind of like dip in and out of like different players and stuff. But one to go on for me is just that if this is all that they're going to do, then yes, if I'm a Colts fan, I totally get why everybody's upset. Like just same thing that you just said. They need defensive backs. Like it's just you look at the depth chart right now. They need defensive backs. I think that there was a spot here if you wanted to go for a Danielle Hunter. Like he is the type of player that they don't really have on their pass rush. If you wanted to make that as a splash, that would be the kind of thing that would take you toward the next level of player. I also understand that he signed for a lot of guaranteed money over 2 years. And I could see maybe not like wanting to step away from that. The secondary is because you did have 51 sacks last year. You have a bunch of guys coming back from that. And you probably feel like you're going to get some development from some of the younger guys. I still think maybe in the draft, like you might want to look there. But the secondary is different. The secondary is a different animal to me. The only move that they've made there is a pseudo move other than Kenny Moore. The only other move they made is a pseudo move because Ronnie Harrison could be back as a linebacker. Everything you just said is true. Like you brought back Gus Bradley. That was the idea was you're going to because he didn't have enough there, he couldn't count on enough. they need some experience back there. I think you can still add pieces in the draft. You can still add competition. You can do whatever you want, but they have to have, well, right now, just without Julian Blackman there, they don't have a strong safety. And that's a spot that the veteran that has the narrative on that has been that they have to have a veteran in that spot, because they tried Nick Cross there for 2 games. He couldn't make the calls. They went to Rodney McLeod. And then last year they switched Julian Blackman there for the same reason. So, you know, they're going to have to do that in terms of they're going to have to do something with strong safety. And then free safety, you could argue, like I would argue that they need to make a move there too. Even if it's a player that is maybe going to start or maybe not, you have to have the option to go to them in case Cross and Thomas still can't get to a consistent level. I think that's the biggest thing with Ballard is he relies so much on his draft picks to develop, and he, you know, counts on them to do it, but like he doesn't do enough to safeguard the Colts in case they don't. And I think that's where with the secondary right now, it's the same thing at cornerback where you have Juju Brentson, Jalen Jones and Dallas Flowers, and they like all those guys, and they should, they have reason to like all those guys. But if they don't take the next step, you're in the same spot you were this year at corner, and you can safeguard. You can safeguard yourself by getting a player. If you get a number one corner, it makes it even easier because then those guys, there's not nearly as much pressure on those guys. But you can safeguard yourself a little bit by making some additions.
Yeah, that's kind of the Ballard thing that I would like to see him correct. Kind of what I was getting at with the backup quarterback is just like it's fun to get excited on the possibility of the potential of these draft picks and developing. But what if they don't, or what if something goes wrong? What if they get hurt? There's often too many positions like that are just on thin ice. If it goes sideways in this league, something always goes sideways. To underscore the point that we're making about the secondary of why, like it's cool to bring Kenny Moore back, and if they bring back Julian Blackman, like that can help plug the hole somewhat. But not only were they not good enough in the secondary with those guys last year, with the other youth around them, that they look, you know, they could roll back, why they need to make additions is that they have to be a lot better because this year's schedule is a lot tougher. And just to sort of sum it up, so we kind of did this last time, but just to quickly go through it, the last quarterbacks they played down the stretch last season from like week 7 on were PJ Walker, Derek Carr, Bryce Young, Mac Jones, Baker Mayfield, Will Levis, Jake Browning, Mitch Trubisky, Taylor Heineke, Aiden O'Connell, and then CJ Stroud. To start next season, the next games are going to go out and play are, it's not an order. We don't know the actual order of the games yet. They're going to go out there and have 2 games against CJ Stroud, 2 against Trevor Lawrence. They've also got Jordan Love, Josh Allen, Tua, looks like Caleb Williams, you know, Jared Goff, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, it's going to be a totally different animal out there. So, like, even if they had last year's schedule, again, they need to be better. But they need to be quite a bit better with what they're about to go face. And so that just kind of underscores the point of, like, yeah, all of this is not only they have to go get experience and get veterans back there, they got to safeguard some of this in case – Juju Brents doesn't start getting healthier, in case Dallas Flowers doesn't come back off of the Achilles injury, in case Nick Cross doesn't get it figured out as a full-time free safety. Like they need the very, very minimum need options at all those spots, if not major upgrades. And they have the money to do it. And I think they got to do at least one of those spots.
Yeah. Ultimately this is the point where like they've re-signed the guys they need to re-sign with the exception of, we kind of talked about this. If you don't re-sign Blackman, there's enough safeties on the market that there's probably a veteran that you can get. There's probably a veteran that you can get who's going to, you know, play that role. Blackman was very, very good last year. I don't want to minimize that, but he's also got some availability issues and some consistency stuff in the past that I could see you maybe moving on if you wanted to. But they, for the most part, they brought everybody back. Now it's about adding, and this team needed to add to get. This team needed to add to what it had, like beyond just filling holes and filling roster spots that had been left open. It needed that. They needed to add, and they still do. They have time. They have plenty of time. Like we could do 3 more of these podcasts, and then suddenly have to do an emergency one based on, you know,
an older player or somebody that they sign who, like you said, like, looks like a Gilmore signing or a Rhodes signing or a Houston signing. But they need to do something, especially since inconsistency because of youth was the biggest issue for them in the secondary last year.
Yeah, and just the division you're in right now where they're chasing C.J. Stroud and the Texans, and you've also got Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars a year removed from being the division champs who had the same record as you last year. So, like you've got to go get the assets that are going to help you contend against those guys. And we saw last year they lost – I know they lost in the fourth down play, that, but mostly they lost in that game. Jonathan Taylor had the best game I've seen him have since his breakout season. So, like, they were in that game because of him, but they were – on thin ice, really, because they're secondary. And so they just can't repeat that mistake again.
That's it for this edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. The bird finally left. He told me it was done. He didn't want to be on camera anymore. Well, I never got him on camera. It's too far up.
Maybe he got a free agent deal from someone else. Had to bolt.
Better money. I didn't notice how quickly he was flying. And I don't know birds well enough to know, like, what his range was either. So...
and we'll see. Maybe be a good fit on like the Falcons or the Cardinals or the Seahawks.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He might get eaten on the Seahawks. He wasn't that big. But that's it for the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I assume there's going to be a lot more for us. I mean, the persistence of the L'Jarius Sneed rumors continues. I don't know if that means they're going to sign him or not, but or trade for him or not, especially with the Chiefs opening up some cap space. But definitely something to monitor as we go forward. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I am Joel A. Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. We will continue to work as hard as we can trying to find out whatever the Colts are going to do next.